This is Rapholics After Hours.
As Intro Pete said, this is Rack Addicts After Hours. Thank you for finding us. We are a music and technology podcast, and it's episode 184. Oh, blimey! They do keep on happening. Oh, dear. For your ears, my name's Ben. Pete is here with me. We have Maisie, the dog, sitting relatively comfortably for now. Firstly, we must visit Pete's week. What have you been doing?
Well, I've gone on a mad Behringer DeepMind purchasing spree.
So you have. And I'm concerned. I think there might be a bit of a problem brewing over there if you're not careful.
Yeah, it's a specialist form of gas targeting one product only.
One particular Behringer product. Amazing. Right, tell us the story. Why?
Well, I've got another DeepMind 12 desktop on order.
Actually, let's roll it all the way back. Your first DeepMind.
My first DeepMind was approximately, I want to say about 7+ years ago.
When
it first came out.
Mm. And that's the 12 desktop.
No, that's just the 12 keyboard version.
12 keyboard. Right.
And I purchased that. I paid top money. They were very expensive in relation to what they are now and have been at that time. And I've had that for many years and enjoyed it. And then more recently, I acquired a secondhand desktop unit, which was all well and good.
Was that like 3 years ago, maybe?
Yeah, two? Possibly, maybe a bit longer, I'd say. Mm. Time's been compressed because of the pandemic.
Yeah, it's all confusing.
And my colleague Mark, who's been on the podcast before,
And we'll be again, Mark. You're here. We'll get you back.
I know. I keep threatening him with it. He insisted that he needed it, and so he had that unit off me and has been successfully doing all sorts of various bits and pieces with it and is very pleased with it. That left me without one. So I had to sort of borrow one for the test chamber project.
Oh,
so
yeah.
That had two DeepMinds for the live situation.
Mm-hmm.
And that desktop that I used, the secondary one, went back. I have now ordered one that I'll keep permanently, a DeepMind 12 desktop.
Yep.
And I grabbed a secondhand DeepMind 6 while I was at it.
Yeah, I think it's a problem.
Yes. So when I get the DeepMind 12 desktop, that'll be my fifth DeepMind.
Wow. You've beaten me on the buying and rebuying. I think I only went for 4 Digitacs in the end.
Still quite a lot of Digitacs.
It is quite a few. I think one technically I borrowed. There we are.
Okay.
That's the one that Sam has now, actually.
Okay. Well, yes. So as you saw, I've got it out on the kitchen table and I'm putting it through its paces.
Well, you had to do a bit of TLC for it, I think, didn't you?
Yes, there was some extra decoration. Let's put it that way.
Tasteful?
Not at all. No, someone had adorned it with the little white stickers that tell you what key each key is.
Oh, yeah. Gotcha.
And I had to remove those, and that was a bit tricky. And they'd also decided to stick some weird neoprene blocks to the bottom of it.
Mm.
So that's all been successfully removed, and I've cleaned it up, and it does look
good stuff.
Reasonably okay. So that one will be flight cased fully and
part of the live rig, then.
Will be permanently part of the live rig.
Awesome.
So as I didn't pay excessive amounts of money for it, I'm not going to abuse it.
Mm.
I have respect for all electronic musical instruments and tend to treat them.
Even the Behringer Poly D.
Well, I don't own one of those. But generally, on the whole, you know, I take care with my equipment. So it'll still be looked after, let's say, but I'm not so worried about having it out and about and as a live instrument. And my original DeepMind 12 will just remain in the studio.
Good stuff.
And that will be, I think, the sum and total of sort of polyphony in my live rig. 2 DeepMinds.
18 voices, not bad.
Yes, I think it'll work.
Is it bi-timbral on the desktop? I don't know if it does that.
No, neither are, but together they will be.
Yeah, of course.
But having the 6, I think it's a nice compact size also for live, because need a massive key bed or anything like that. I just need some keys, and that will allow me to trigger various things, and it'll all be down to the programming. Whatever I'm using, whether it be the Digitech that's doing all the work or whatever it ends up being, it will be changing all the settings and all the units. Yes, so I just need to get that ready for the impending stage 4 of the test chamber project, the live to the general public.
Indeed, and you can find a little teaser trailer for that on youtube.com/C/modcaf, M-O-D-C-A-F, 30th of September, wait, no, 30 days have September, yeah, 30th of September, 1st of October, that weekend, both days. Be there!
And further to that, I have some questions regarding the mastering.
Yes. Fire away. I don't claim to know much about the mastering process, but I'm at least handing over the stuff, so I'm the in-between stage.
Do you know if they are or the person that's going to be mastering is using proper outboard or they mainly software?
I have no idea. Why?
Just because I initially listened to my 6 takes, decided on which was the best one.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a little bit of an issue around 200 hertz, whereby there was a tom strike, which was an important pattern. You just couldn't hear the pattern. You just heard this sort of...
the tail.
Just resonating.
Got it.
And I was quite distressed, let it that way. Thinking,
I'm sure it'll be fine. So what I'm going to do, for everybody that has specific requests, I will forward notes on. And we have asked for preservation of the character of the room, but we have the option for little corrective things. Obviously, we're going for the cohesion. What I think we don't want to do much is... obviously, there will be some dynamic processing, but, you know, nothing that would affect the smoothness of the reverb tail.
Yes.
You see what I mean? But little things like that, I'm sure we can go in and get those fixed. So as long as you know what frequency it is and we can easily direct his ears to it, I'm sure we'll be fine.
Well, I can send him charts and everything.
Yeah.
This is what I wanted to discuss. How do I describe an EQ profile, if that's the right way of describing
it? Well, if you found the problematic frequency and you can say, oh, it's actually a tom in the breakbeat at this frequency, he'll absolutely be able to find it.
What
no
I
problem.
Did was that I put it through FabFilter Pro Q and played around with pulling it down in certain frequencies. Mm. And what I found was that if I pulled it down by between 15 and 20 decibels at exactly 200 hertz, and then it would, because of the way FabFilter works, it gives you natural roll off back up to 0 decibels. So it rolled back up to the low end in that direction, and then it rolled off in the other direction to the high end. The same sort of, I don't know whether it's an exponential curve.
It would just be the usual bell shape at whichever Q factor you set it to.
Okay. And then I pulled about, or at the really top end, I pulled about 10 decibels off just to take this, to balance
a kind of
it,
shelf.
Just to balance what I'd taken out in that mid-range, that mid to low.
Yeah, don't you worry. We've got a few people who've said, actually, ooh, there's a little, some issues. At the end of the day, we will trust our mastering engineer's ears as the absolute bastion of correctness. But if you have concerns, we will definitely tell them about it.
It really did make a difference. I was quite surprised how much change, positive change, I could make just by a little bit of EQing.
Yeah,
really,
no problem. Let me write it down so we don't forget, shall we? So here we are. You are the 13th person. Rack Addicts. Do you happen to know which take it was off the top of your head?
Yes, it's take 5.
Take 5, wonderful. Have you titled this piece?
Just call it Deep Minds.
To make it less obvious, shall it be Deep Space Minds?
Yeah, if you want to do it that way.
That's a little bit more interesting there. Cool.
I thought that was good, the plural, because it was 2 of them.
Yeah, yeah. So there's a tom in the breakbeat. Resonating 200 hertz.
Well, 200 hertz was the most effective. I sort of mucked around with lots of different positioning, but 200 hertz did something that it still preserved the sort of low end in a nice way, and it rolled off nicely. I'll demonstrate it after we finish the podcast.
No problem,
so you can actually hear, because I've got a little project with it in. I mean, I can take screenshots of the Pro Q.
Don't you worry.
To give it, rather than some great long paragraph of what the parabolic curve was coming out of the subtraction of the...
Well, I mean, the FabFilter stuff is so good, it's quite likely there's actually a tool that he uses anyway. The only other person that's titled their track so far is Simon with Breaking Wind Tunnel Rules, in brackets, Spitfire Dub, which I think is quite fun.
Is he the one with the propeller?
With the propeller and the sort of bit from the gun port, cannon port.
I only saw the propeller in the back of his car.
Yeah, he had it in his Christmas tree stand, which really cracked me up. Good stuff.
He said he sampled it.
Yeah, well, there was he made a whole YouTube video about it, sampling it with a friend into his Deluge, and then I think that became the drums, which he then played in the wind tunnel.
Okay.
And then he also used it as a slide, and then he hit the thing. It was great. Really fun stuff. So his concern was in the low end. He wants more.
Wants more low end.
Yeah, so I'll be passing on that one.
You can boost that.
Of course you can. Of course you can.
What I will say, though, what was recorded on the ambisonic microphone wasn't what I heard in the room.
Well, you weren't right next to the microphone. It does change quite significantly.
I think I should have either been right next to the microphone, or the microphone should have been right next to me.
Yeah.
One of the two.
But then you will hear a lot more kind of shifting and button clacking and such like.
I wasn't doing a lot of shifting and button clacking. I was doing a bit of subtle head nodding.
That was the same with Simon, actually. He sort of heard it and went, ooh, that really... really isn't what I heard while I was there. But of course, we all trusted in Jeremy's ears.
Yes.
When he was moving the mic around, because obviously the performing and videoing position might not have been optimal for sound quality.
Yes.
Because of course, David was standing beneath the fan blades, and then the microphone was opposite him on the, well, in the test chamber, on the kind of weighing scale sort of area.
How was he monitoring that? Just by...
He was there.
He was there.
He was there. He heard it, but he heard it differently.
Yeah, it was definitely a lot more clarity where I was standing.
Mm.
And obviously, just having that mic, that just bit further back, there was just a lot more resonance.
Resonance indeed.
Anyway.
There we are.
That was my week.
Wonderful.
Deep minds all over the place.
Yeah. Not much from my week, apart from I had a little bit of a think about things, and I realised something to do with owning a flat and my experience with guitars and bicycles, which is kind of odd. So I'm quite stressed out that I own a flat, possibly because of the scale of the thing, but possibly not. What I thought was, if we look at a bicycle, you can see all its bits exposed, and I feel I am competent in fixing it, repairing it, maintaining it, keeping it running and healthy, so I'm happy that I own it, even if it is quite expensive. Same with my guitars. I know how to fix them if they go wrong. I know how to keep them shipshape, even if I don't play them that often. And I'm happy to own two expensive guitars. I know nothing about owning and maintaining and keeping a home, and it stresses me out quite a lot. And the cats had ripped up a bunch of, you know, the kind of the silicon bit, one of those beads, along the bottom of a skirting board.
Yes.
And were eating bits, which obviously isn't good. So I had to go and try and mend that. And it was a complete blag, because I don't know what I'm doing. And yeah, I was just a bit stressed out by not knowing what I'm doing. It worked. They haven't gone back near it, and it looks kind of fine. But I'm so new with all this house stuff. It's quite stressful. Does that get easier, Pete? Or have you always known how to fix random things about the house?
I did grow up doing a lot of DIY.
Mm.
I grew up in the 60s and 70s. You had to do everything yourself.
Yeah. Because my dad did all of our house DIY, but I didn't tag along for enough of it.
Yes, my parents didn't. I did it.
Yeah, damn. I can hang a picture on the wall. That's not too bad. I can do that.
I learned all the arts of things like wallpapering and painting, yeah, and all that type of stuff. And then subsequently, I've just done a lot of it throughout my working life in all sorts of guises.
Yeah, it's a big collection of skills I wish I'd picked up.
The only thing I can't do, and that is only because I haven't got the qualifications that are imperative to have, is gas.
Oh, of course. Well, that's a kind of a legal issue as well, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. Wouldn't want to go near it.
But I can do all the electrics. I can do all the plumbing.
Yeah.
Most building tasks. I'm not particularly adept at bricklaying or anything like that. Mm. But I've done a reasonable amount of plastering, a lot of woodwork.
Yes, it's interesting. So you can always fix a problem either by doing it yourself or by throwing money at it.
Yes.
And even if I had the money to throw at all these things, I wouldn't want to, because I like knowing how things work. It's the first time you do something and it's terrible, but then you do figure out how it works and the next time will be fine.
Yeah, try
it. Practice on the first. Oh, it's awful. Anyway, that's been my week. I've been thinking about that.
Trial and error.
Yeah.
You'll get there.
Eventually.
There's so many things that I've done and then thought I could have done that so much better the next time, but the trouble is,
you just have to wait for the next time, I suppose.
And if it's a major tiling job,
you have to live with it.
Yes.
Mm.
I have stripped things back if I haven't got there and gone, no, damn, there's a little thing and it'll...
Oh, and you've just gone round and done it again.
Yeah, because...
Yeah, that's fair enough.
Every time I walk in the room, my eyes will just be directed to that little greebly or what, something or other that shouldn't be there.
Yeah. Anyway, there's my week and my thoughts. There is some news, one of which I'm quite interested in. Let's do a quick fire modular thing. This is from Tubutech. And given the rise of more voice-type modules with TRS MIDI on them, this could prove useful. It is a 4x4 TRS MIDI router and merger with 4 ins, 4 outs, and it can split and merge such things. So it has settings for, well, independent flow settings for notes and CCs, clocks, and SysX. I don't know really what kind of system exclusive stuff you'd be chucking around with these kind of things, but the option is there. It's all kind of color-coded. There's a MIDI event monitor color-coding system, and it automatically accepts and understands both A and B TRS MIDI, which is super cool. You can save and recall routing settings. I think it's really cool.
It does sound quite interesting.
Yeah, if you do amass quite a few of these voices, it might be one of those things that becomes quite imperative, in fact.
Again, I have at least two or possibly more units that have MIDI via TSR in them, and it would be handy if I could sort of centralise that into one module.
Yeah, especially if you've got one or more MIDI sequencing devices, perhaps.
Yes. Can you switch between them?
I haven't dug through the manual, but given that it is a merging and routing thing, if you couldn't, I'd be surprised. But there it is. That is Tubutech TRS Bridge, and currently Modular Grid suggests €200, 6 HP.
And what colour does it come in?
It's not going to fit with your colour scheme.
Oh, God, it's silver.
It is silver. Yes. So that's cool. If you need it, it's there. Medium-sized news. Farewell, Montage. The Yamaha Montage is no more. The flagship sort of workstation synth, I guess you could call it.
Stage piano.
Stage piano, workstation. It's gone. But in the autumn, apparently there's something to replace it. Will we be excited about it? Probably not. But it's a big name, and it's going away.
So was it just going to be a Montage 2 or something?
You never know. Are there any old names that they might resurrect? What's that one that...
Well, the predecessor to the Montage is the Motif.
Yeah, is there... Isn't there one that Tony Banks used? Or was he more of a Korg workstation guy?
I know Rick Wakeman's very Korg-orientated. Mm.
I'm going to have to look this up now. It's going to annoy me. Because lots of manufacturers do that thing. They'll pull a vintage name when they release something new.
Yes.
Don't they?
Well, the Montage line, let's call them, went for a good, I want to say, 15 years.
Oh, yeah, that is a while.
If not longer. They had various incarnations. I've got the last one in the studio, the XF8. And then that was replaced by the Montage. So, as I say, a Montage 2 or a Montage X, a Montage Plus. Because the MODX, which is
it was like the cut-down version,
yes,
wasn't it?
The Montage Lite, the new one of that is the MODX Plus.
No, I was thinking Korg. I was thinking of the Korg Oasis. That was the last kind of workstation that Tony Banks was using.
Well, I hope they've dramatically updated the operating system.
Is it clunky?
Well, it's okay, but like a lot of these stage pianos, it takes forever to boot.
Yeah, it's a slow one. Didn't they have a stupid name for the multicoloured, the knob?
Yeah, it's just called the Big Knob.
Was it just called the Big Knob? I thought that was a Mackie thing.
Well, there is the Mackie Big Knob, but...
the Utility Knob. The Ultra Knob.
Yeah, something like that. I can't remember. I had the full training on it at one stage.
Oh, yeah, really?
Yeah, courtesy of Yamaha.
I'm Googling it again because I want to know. They gave it a name. It's the Super Knob. Yeah. I knew it was something stupid like that. The Super Knob. Because, of course, it's RGB. RGB everything. Okay, after Ian's awesome Lyra drone off at the last Modular Cafe, I was quite excited about this release. It's a Walrus Audio stereo version of the Slow pedal. That is S-L-O with an umlaut on it. The stereo version is called Slower, S-L-O umlaut E-R, and it's pretty cool. Let me show you some exemplaires. It's on the Walrus Audio channel, so it is mostly guitar focused, but here we go. It sounds pretty cool. What do you reckon, Pete?
Yes. And is it stereo in, stereo out?
It is.
Okay, I'm interested.
Now he's listening. He doesn't want any of this mono to stereo business. Come on, price me.
All right, all right.
Oh, there we go. It's on the local music shop's website. Pre-order for $339. So it's quite a pricey, not massively multifunction, but just reverb type deal. So you have controls for decay, filter, depth, mix, stretch, which is the sample rate, X, which will be the kind of mode-specific parameter, wide, medium, and narrow width options. I believe there is an LFO that modulates some parameters, and your modes are dream, light, rain, dark, and rise, with rain being one of those ones, you know, when they kind of unblend, like a digital kind of algorithm, and it becomes kind of bitty. Those are kind of cool. So there you go. Walrus Audio Slower. Oh, I reckon that's quite a good bit. Why have I gone Australian? I don't know. It happens to me sometimes. There we are. The synth news for the week is done, which means we must go towards our miscellaneous multimedia recommendation, and I'm going to go again for a bit of music, which is on the Rack Addict After Hours Tunes playlist, which you can find by following tinyurl.com/rackaddicts. The track for this week is Put It to Sleep by Metterson. I think that's how you pronounce his name. Kind of poppy, quite ambient. I do like this one. There are 4 tracks in the playlist now, which is definitely not the totality of music recommended over our 184 episodes, but there's a few there anyway. Road to Joy by Peter Gabriel, Look at Me by Destart, Ghosts by Vola, and now Put It to Sleep by Metterson. And there's no screaming on it yet. I'll refrain from the angry metal boys for as long as possible. Pete, take us away. What have you got this week?
Right, I've got a kind of interesting YouTube channel that I came across earlier in the week, and it's entitled Alan Barton, the Antiquarian.
Interesting. Old things, it sounds like.
Yes, this particular gentleman is particularly obsessed with old things. In fact, it's a bit morbid in parts, to be honest.
Okay.
And there's a lot of kind of delving into the contents of tombs and coffins and stuff like that. But it is still quite interesting, and I would certainly recommend it. The videos I've watched so far are the inside of the Emperor's Tomb. Again, that was a bit morbid.
There's one here called The Slamming Door at Cleve, a bit of a spooky extra.
Yes.
That's like a bit of a ghost story. That's kind of fun.
And the other one that I watched was a detailed explanation of the, I don't know if it's a chapel or a crypt at Windsor Castle where the Queen was laid to rest.
Oh, interesting.
And it was its history. And it really struck me how weird the royal family are.
Oh, yeah, interesting.
Because they still have
more weirdness.
They have the corpses of their ancestors, literally.
They've still got all of them. Well, loads of them.
They've got a lot of them going back nearly 900 years.
That is really weird.
It is weird when when it's presented to you like that. It's kind of really strange.
Yeah, which video was that?
I shall find it. There should be a red alert
title.
Right, that one was entitled A Look Inside the Royal Vault at Windsor Castle.
Gotcha.
And it's accompanied with lots of sketches and Victorian photographs and all sorts of other creepy objets d'art to go
good
along
stuff.
With it.
I'll have a look at that later.
Anyone that's fascinated with royal funerals will be positively gripped by that particular episode. Anyway, that's my multimedia recommendation for this week, the YouTube channel Alan Barton, the Antiquarian.
Not bad. It looks like they've also got kind of a magazine of sorts, digital and print, called The Antiquary.
Yes.
Kind of cool. Back issues going. Issue 12 was, July? No. August 2022 been going.
Yeah, it's not very long. The YouTube channel's only about a year old.
Yeah. Super cool. Audience, thank you, you wonderful human beings, for tuning into our little weird podcast in this strange corner of the internet. Be sure to come back soon and make sure you mark those dates in your calendar. If you're near Farnborough, 30th of September, 1st of October, for Test Chamber live at Q121. Farewell!